You are listening to a bulletin of news from the United Nations in New York. I am Derek Mbata. Governments need to consider the social consequences of economic policies before instituting them, especially during an economic crisis, according to Jomo Kwame Sundaram, a senior UN official from the Department of Economic Affairs. Mr. Sundaram says the global crisis is a reminder that it is essential for people to be healthy, educated, adequately housed, and well-fed to be more productive and better able to contribute to society.
Very often, restoring financial systems has come at the cost of, for example, finance available for food, for health systems, for education, and other things which affect human welfare. So this has been the unfortunate situation. And in many countries, especially when they have been forced to make budget cuts, the budget cuts have tended to hit these social expenditures more than anything else.
The treatment of civilians in the Sudanese state of southern Kordofan is being called reprehensible by the United Nations humanitarian chief. Valerie Amos says she has heard reports of human rights abuses and targeting of people along ethnic lines. The humanitarian chief also says threats to aid workers and peacekeepers need to stop immediately. She is urging the Sudanese government to allow humanitarian agencies access to more than 70,000 people displaced by the recent fighting between northern and southern troops. It's estimated that 130 million child laborers are exposed to dangerous and sometimes deadly pesticides each year. The International Labour Organization and the UN Food and Agriculture Organization have been working with governments to curb child labour. They want to collect data on exposure to toxic chemicals to vulnerable groups as an essential tool for policy-making process and legislative actions. Paola Termine is a technical specialist with the ILO.
The latest estimates of the International Labour Organization say that 60% of all child labour is in agriculture, which means that of the 250 million child labourers, there are almost 130 million child labourers in agriculture.
One day after UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon was reappointed to a second term, the General Assembly elects its new president. The 192-member body is expected to approve Ambassador Nasser Abdelaziz Al-Nasser of Qatar as the president of the 66th session of the UN General Assembly in New York on Wednesday. Al-Nasser, who is fluent in Arabic and English, is a career diplomat, having held several positions with the Qatari government. Joseph Dice is the current General Assembly president. The new term begins in September when the session starts. You have been listening to a bulletin of news from the United Nations in New York. Human welfare in many parts of the world has suffered as a result of countries focusing on rebuilding their finance systems following the economic crisis. A report published by the UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs, UNDESA, says that economic policies were considered in isolation from their social consequences. Patrick Maigwa has been speaking to Jomo Kwame Sundaram, the Assistant Secretary General for Economic Development at UNDESA. He asked him how governments around the world responded to the financial crisis.
Many governments have tended to neglect the social side. Particularly in coping with the crisis, the emphasis has really been very much on restoring financial systems. And restoring financial systems is very, very important. But at the same time, very often, restoring financial systems has come at the cost of, for example, finance available for food, for health systems, for education, and other things which affect human welfare. So this has been the unfortunate situation. And in many countries, especially when they have been forced to make budget cuts, the budget cuts have tended to hit these social expenditures more than anything else.
Is this trend seen across the board in both the developing and the developed countries?
I don't think it would be fair to say that every developed and developing country has responded in the same way. And thankfully, in many developing countries, the impact of the crisis has been relatively short-lived. So many developing countries have been able to come back to economic growth. Unfortunately, however, in many developing countries, there is much less social provisioning, much less social protection, much less so-called social safety nets. So there is much more to be done. At the same time, we have a problem that many of the poorest countries depend on external aid. And much of the external aid has often been for supporting social programs. And this external aid has been adversely affected, except one or two countries which have made very strong commitments to not to cut their aid.
What are the social consequences of the global and economic financial crisis that the world has been going through?
Well, the biggest social consequence is unemployment. And in developing countries, it's more vulnerable employment, more casual employment, more underemployment, and lower living standards, and so on. Then the other are more related to government spending. You know, how much the government is able to spend on education, on health, on food programs, and so on and so forth. All this have been adversely affected.
What is the way forward for countries?
The most important thing to be done is to generate employment. Employment can be generated directly by government creating jobs and so on and so forth, but indirectly, the government can provide incentives, infrastructure, etc., for individuals or private companies to create jobs.
That was Jomo Kwame Sundaram, the Assistant Secretary General for Economic Development at UNDESA. For businesses around the world, adapting to a green economy may seem too costly, especially when the benefits are not immediately seen. But researchers and environmentalists say that if businesses continue to ignore the changes in the environment, the ultimate price may be too much to bear. Radmila Suleimanova has more.
Businesses can't afford to ignore climate change any longer. That's the message from Janet Ranganathan, the Vice President for Science and Research at the World Resources Institute.
Unfortunately, climate change is no longer a distant phenomenon. It's here, it's happening, it's knocking on our doors, and it's knocking on the operations and supply chains and of those of their customers, of businesses all around the globe. So they need to be ready.
Ranganathan's organization co-authored a new report, Adapting to a Green Economy, Companies, Communities, and Climate Change. She says strengthening governments is essential to combating climate change.
It's poor governance that significantly increases the vulnerability, in particular of the poor. We can work very hard to reduce emissions, but there's a certain amount of climate change already built into the system, which we can't alter. The preparedness and reducing the vulnerability of people is as important to the outcomes of climate change as the physical impacts themselves. Reducing vulnerability of poor communities is completely within our control.
Populations that suffer from water shortages, drought, and people who live by the water and on small islands are the most vulnerable, but the changing environment affects us all, and sometimes the effects are rippling. Raymond Offenheiser is the president of the international non-governmental organization Oxfam America. He says that climate change on one continent can inspire political unrest on another continent as food prices soar.
Some of the turmoil in Tunisia, some of the turmoil in Egypt and across the Maghreb has actually been attributed to not only to the yearnings of populations for greater participation in governance, but also just with, you know, a concern about the basic their basic needs for survival and the price of bread.
Is there a united global front to tackle this issue? George Kell is the executive director at UN Global Compact, an international organization that works worldwide to ensure a mutually beneficial relationship between companies and communities. He says that the most important thing in tackling the issue of climate change is first to build a global consensus.
Humanity always finds a way ultimately to adopt, and human ingenuity will find answers. The question is just at what costs, and wouldn't the costs be lower if we weren't to start action earlier? And the answer to that is clearly yes. We certainly could avoid negative impacts if we took action much earlier.
This report is hoped to inspire the dialogue for the Earth Summit in Brazil next summer. Radmila Suleimanova, United Nations Radio.
You have been listening to United Nations Radio in New York. I am Derek Mbata.